Oh, hey there, boils and hurls. Yeah, you ready? I'm ghoulish Vertel, which looks a lot like goulash, which reminds me of my grandmother's not great cooking. And welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly witch's brew about the pop culture we all love a scary amount. With me to talk TV, film, potions, music, and anything else spooky are digital strategist and vampire hunter Winter Mitchell.
I don't even have like a cute thing to say other than hello, hello.
This copy is like just the Diablo Codius.
It really is. I can't even lean in.
Yes, right. Well, just stay where you are.
Okay.
You're fine. Film critic and gremlin snatcher Alonzo Dural dead.
I do a terrible impersonation of the Crypt Keeper.
I thought it was cute. And pop culture scholar and part-time werewolf.
For sure.
Garen Tongson.
Oh, a la Shakira.
Oh, what an amazing
single. Warren Zevon.
True.
And hey, Rocketeers. Yeah.
Hello, Rocketeers. God, I love She-Wolf. Coming up in this week's show, we are talking about the scariest things from our childhoods. I'm already laughing. I'm containing myself. Plus, we'll each be sharing our latest monster mashes. But first, let's find out what arts and entertainment news or events have rattled our bones this week. We're going to start with Winter Mitchell.
Oh, I watched a movie last night that I actually... Everybody that I watched it with hated. I have a weekly movie club, and all 12 other people hated it, but I thought it was great. And it's called Brawl on Cell Block 99, and it's starring Vince Vaughn, whom I hate.
No, you're a human being.
Oh, yeah, so I can't, literally don't like him. I liked him when he was at his best, which to me was Wedding Planner.
Wedding singer.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. No, wedding Crashers.
Wedding Crashers.
Yeah, I've seen them all. Sorry. Wedding Crashers and the Fraternity House movie.
Old school.
Yeah, God. I should just really stop smoking weed before I go. And Old School. I liked him in Old School. And I just think he's, in Swingers, I just think he's at his best when he's being comical. Not to say that I don't want him to go outside of his lane, because when he was in, I think he was adorable, Norman Bates and Psycho. And I think he was Broke Down Paradise. Is he in Broke Down Paradise?
Broke Down Palace.
Sorry, what the fuck? Can I just refer to that?
By the way, how do you feel about being the only person to ever compliment the movie Psycho, the remake?
Yeah, no kidding.
I liked the remake. It was a shot-for-shot remake. Anyway, I think that he's good when he kind of diverts, but, when he doesn't go too far. He really leans into this role as sort of like a down-on-his-luck former boxer. He's married. His wife's kind of fooling around. That's the beginning of the movie. And then he starts selling drugs. And as he's successful at it, they get a house, they have a baby, their marriage is rekindled, but then kind of gets in some fuzzy stuff and ends up going to jail doing like a hard 7 for drug dealing. And then it goes even further. And I don't understand it. The movie is completely, it's by the guy who did Bone Tomahawk, which is another movie that is very exploitation-y, like a Western, spaghetti Western, but trying to be like all different types of spaghetti Westerns with a little bit of exploitation in it. But this was a super, like, one of those movies where just take the, if you threw in a couple of girls wrestling and snatching off their clothes, it would be like one of those. But it's not. It's a really small cast. Don Johnson plays the villain.
Wait, Don Johnson is also in it? It's like they're in the same idiom. Vince Vaughn and Don Johnson
yes.
like Opry 90s.
It's just a perplexing, I did some wikiing about it, and it opened at a competition in Venice Film Festival this year. It only went straight to VOD like a couple weeks ago.
I was wondering how you saw it.
Yes, it was straight to VOD, and it's totally gruesome and gory. That's what I like about it. It's just gnarly. But he has a southern accent, but it lives in upstate New York, and we don't really know where he came from. I like the story. It's way too long for an exploitation movie, but it's just about the prison system, and he kicks so much ass in this movie. So I don't know what direction he's trying to take his
brand
into, but I can totally deal with Vince Vaughn trying to be Clint Eastwood.
Karen.
I've been talking about sports nonstop for several weeks
and
now.
And we've been asking Oliver. You to stop, please.
Yes,
I know,
yes,
I know this isn't the room for it, but it's been 29 years since my beloved Los Angeles Dodgers have been to the World Series.
It's pretty awesome.
And, It's huge. It's great. I mean, I wept. When I the last time they were in the World Series, I was in high school. I was I guess this was the beginning of my sophomore year in high school. I was 15, marching band practice. We were listening to a little transistor radio as Oral Hershiser threw like the last pitches of the last out. And, you know, I just remember how radiant that moment was, not imagining that I would be 44 until I'd have an opportunity to experience that again. And I just, you know, one of the things that I wanted to talk about is just the kind of effervescence of team spirit that's happening right now with the team. Like every day, a different hero. This time it was Kike Hernandez, who a lot of people freaked out about the fact that his name was being tweeted a lot without the accent marks on Twitter. In fact, someone got on my case about it and I deleted it and like added it with
what?
The accent marks. Anyway.
Lean into it.
It's very hard to know how to type the accent.
It's really. Yeah. I mean, you know, I had a sense of which direction the accent went. But in any case, I don't know. I'm just super thrilled. I'm excited. I'm also like really nervous. My Dodgers gut is like out of proportion at this point. My wife is just like, you won't survive the rest of the playoff season and the championship if you continue to drink beer in these volumes and have chicken wings in this with this tremendous volume. So anyway. I know
really
this
shocked.
Is falling on deaf ears here.
It really is.
Can you tie the chicken
you?
Wings to like how they, to, that's why they won? Like, you, honey, I have to have this all three dozen or they're going to lose.
This is part of, that is part of it. It's like I am deeply enmeshed in a series of intense superstitious rituals that involve.
Are you not laundering
socks.
Anything?
No, I'm laundering. I'm obsessively laundering. It involves socks. It involves underwear. It involves my 1988 World Series shirt. It involves. Drinking at only particular moments during the game. So I'm a hot mess, people.
Okay.
I'm a hot mess.
I'm just like... really surprised that it's taking them almost 30 years.
Well, because they're in the playoffs all the time, but I think it really
well,
is.
Well, it's Karen's
you know.
Fault.
It is, because, you know, I hadn't been paying close
Stop
enough attention.
Stop washing your drawers.
Exactly. No, I mean, I had to keep washing them. It's like, you know how there was this rumor that Prince changed his underwear every 20 minutes? Do you remember that?
Oh, no.
Like, I missed that one.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it was only in Riverside, California, that rumor was circulating, but anyway, so I do a lot of laundry right now, and it's kind of, I don't know, at least it's clean.
Well, let me say this. So the Dodgers beat the Cubs, and I'm from a suburb of Chicago, and I've never been an obsessive sports fan, and I have three brothers who are deeply into the Cubs, and it was just such a relief this year that them losing at this stage was not horrifying or devastating. Because, you know, it's like, okay, thank God we got that out of the way last year.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
What I'm saying. I'm happy for that.
Okay. They were super relieved. Yeah. Now, so now, of course, all of us, especially those of us who are deeply invested, are so tense. And I mean, by the time I guess we prepare next week's show, we should know who is the
I got to tell you, though, like somebody, one of my friends in Houston, like tagged me and said, you know, we'll give you a couple games. And I was like, honey, you can have it. I don't really. I'm a
other Dodger, people's fetishes.
Other
my
precious.
Right.
Yeah, precious.
My precious. It's my precious.
The Giants are like. Did they win a game this year? I don't know. I'm not invested right this season. I'm just not invested.
They're there.
It's a thinking man's game.
Well. Alonzo.
Well, you know, I was going to talk about the blissful stupidity of Geostorm,
which is an amazingly named movie.
Yeah.
As opposed to those other storms.
And they say it a lot, which is the best part. It's like 5 minutes until the Geostorm.
Oh, yay. it's like New Year's Eve.
Pretty much. Yeah. Everybody's getting the champagne chill for the Geostorm. Yeah. Who will you kiss when the Geostorm hits? No, but what I wanted to actually give a shout out to this week, you know, there's a thing where old stuff will suddenly surface on the internet, and I don't know if it's that it just got added to YouTube or that one person posts it and then suddenly other people post it and then it becomes a thing out of nowhere, like, you know, the ongoing death of Rue McClanahan or whatever.
Right.
But for some reason, all over my Facebook feed this week, I've been seeing the 1983-2020 interview where Barbara Walters talks to Harvey Fierstein, who at that moment was starring in Torch Song Trilogy on Broadway, which he had written, and he had also written the season's hit new musical, La Cage aux Folles. And it is so... a homosexuality 101 interview, and people are either interpreting it as like that Barbara Walters is always 10 steps behind the curve when it comes to anything sex related, or she's savvy and cosmopolitan and she's throwing him the softballs so that he can talk to the people in Idaho who are freaking out that he's even on television.
Right, yeah.
Either way, I watched that interview when it aired as a teenager with my mother.
Oh, wow.
And I still, it all came back to me watching that again, because there's a moment where he talks about, you know, she's saying, oh, well, you know, there are people who are going to say that, you know, why are we even putting this interview on television? Why are we giving, you know, why are we paying attention to this sort of thing? And he said that you know, everyone has somebody gay in their family. And if you shut your mind off to that, then you are denying, you know, that brother, that cousin, that, you know, that daughter, blah, blah, blah. And when he said that every family has a gay person in it, my mother said something along the lines of, well, this one better hadn't.
Oh, wow.
And you turned to an imaginary camera and winked.
No, I think I turned into a pillar of salt, actually, at the moment. But I will giving credit where it is due. I know she knew, because mothers always do. And she did not live long enough for me to come out. But I know that if she had, she'd have been cool eventually. She'd have made sure that everybody else was on the same page, too. She was awesome. But in that moment, I think she was still like, if there's a way to stem this tide,
it'll be this moment.
I'm not saying anything positive right now. So anyway, but it's fascinating to look at this interview, just the way she talks about homosexuality as this beamed in from another planet thing. So people who think that it's always just been like easy skating, Will and Grace, 1983 was not that long ago.
Right.
Yeah.
And it, you would think this was 1883.
My story is also gayish related. Can you believe it? This past week is the 25th anniversary of Erotica, which is, if you haven't met a gay person who claims it's her most underrated album, meet three more gay people and you will. I don't know. Where do we fall on
and
the Madonna?
And the sex book.
And the sex book was this week, too.
Yeah, the sex book.
Where do you fall on the Madonna fandom world? I'm like a Sandinista super defender creep.
So Bedtime Stories was right after Erotica, right?
Yes.
Erotica, the reason why I don't think I love Erotica as much as I should is because there was every single effort to keep it away from us.
Oh, right, right.
You know what I mean? And I was, so 25 years.
Yeah, it's gritty.
It's gritty, but it was like 94?
92.
Okay, my math is off. It was just, that was a really crowded pop culture year. So like, I think that when it came to the MTV of it all, I think they were doing everything to take away the sexuality of it. Like they gave us like video edits of Erotica. The
right.
Videos.
You can only see the real thing at like 3 a.m.
If I can't see penetration, then I don't want it. What?
Sophisticated argument.
Which was in the uncut version.
Yes. You know?
Well, I mean, I remember when my friend, I was in college at the time, I was just starting college, and a friend got a copy of the sex book.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And I just remember we all gathered and unwrapped it as if it were, you know, like the Talmud or something
fiction.
Like
yes.
that.
Yeah.
And you know, I remember like, dear Ingrid, how do you, Ingrid Cazares? Yes. I still fucking know who Ingrid Cazares is.
I think she's still
so
relevant in Miami
for
sure.
Yeah, I'm sure she is. I mean, I just remember she had that amazing like white pantsuit. Anyway.
Right.
So I think that was probably my peak Madonna moment. It was after Truth or Dare.
Right.
And I really tracked Madonna all the way through to music and then kind of fell off in the post-Guy Ritchie era.
American life.
Yeah, and so sort of once she
swept
like
away.
Once she became British, basically, that's when I sort of ended my like encounters with Madonna. And I guess maybe I became slightly more lesbian separatist and she was more within the realm of like gay men at that point. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the lesbians had moved on, whereas in that magical moment in the early 90s,
the Sandra
like,
Bernhardt years.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
She wasn't leaning
all
into
of us were,
the lesbianism.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean,
you know what I mean? It almost.
Right, she did that in 88.
Yeah. Like, it's now who she is now.
Yeah.
I can't see her being as wild as she proclaimed to
yeah.
be.
So I think historians would have you believe that like Madonna's all-time biggest moment is the Like a Virgin era, when in fact she was the biggest star in the world in 1990. Like you definitely need her the Vogue moment, the Justify My Love video, mm-hmm. Immaculate
Dick
Collection
Tracy.
Coming out, Dick Tracy
right.
performing at the Oscars, and then
Who's
Truth or Dare happening.
Girl?
And, right. Oh, we can go into her whole career. Dangerous Game, I'll go there. And so when the sex book happened.
A League of Their Own.
Of course. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that was also in that.
Lesbians.
And she was becoming a more of a balladeer, if you will, during that
yes.
time. I think what people underestimate about the sex book and erotica is that I think it's a lot of her responding to the not just her monumental fame from the year preceding, but like to how people were still talking about her as basically just a tramp. Yeah. So she's like, you think I'm a tramp? Well, here comes the book about being a tramp.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You're not going to shut up about the penthouse photos? Oh, check this out.
Yes. Yeah. Right. About the penthouse. Yeah, that's
so funny. It still feels pretty defiant to me. And I would say also about erotica that it's when she became an albums artist. That's what unites all her 90s work to me, Bedtime Stories, Ray of Light. And it's also why her second greatest hits album isn't as good, because she's an albums artist by that time, whereas in the Immaculate Collection days, she was singles, you know.
This is the era that I love the most. Is I don't love erotica as much as an album, but I love that era because it was hardcore, Gianni Versace, Miami, cycling, biker shorts, Dennis Rodman, Eric Cassard, nightclubs,
Herberts.
It was just, you know, like it was so decadent.
Yes.
And then it felt like a fun place to be because you had you already knew what LA was like. And you already knew what New York was like because the paparazzi and all the gossip magazines and all the entertainment shows would show you. But you did, to me, she did more besides Gloria Estefan. She highlighted and captured how ridiculous South Beach was as a celebrity. It was just a mob scene. And I just feel like when she was there, she was living it up.
And the sex book managed to put porn star Joey Stefano and Vanilla Ice in the same place.
And Big Daddy Kane.
Yes.
Big Daddy Kane.
I also want to say my last thing that I think is amazing about Madonna and will continue to be is the music itself, there's some super sexual moments, but it's mostly like a kind of cynical, near burlesque bluesy album. Mm-hmm. And a couple of tracks in particular, Bye Bye Baby is the one I'm thinking about right now.
Oh, I love. And Bad Girl.
Oh, yeah. Which is inspired by one of my favorite movies, Looking for Mr. Goodbar. Anyway. Bye Bye Babe. You don't love it? Oh, I hate the ending. I love everything else about it.
That Good Looking for Mr. Goodbar is so a movie made by a 7-year-old white man who is horrified at what the kids are doing these days.
But Diane's too amazing.
Well, anyway. She's great, but the movie is reprehensible.
But anyway, in the lyrics, Madonna laughs at men who are obsessed with her. And I think that's just one of the most cool, defiant things about her. It's like, I'm a woman and I get to laugh at a man. That's how it works.
I forgot about that song. I'm going to listen to that tonight. I love that song.
So anyway.
Thank you for doing
enjoy that. Enjoy erotica. Enjoy sex.
All of it.
You're listening to Pop Rocket. We'll be right back to talk about all the stuff that scared us as kids after this.
Hello, I'm Ross Blotcher.
And I'm Carrie Poppy. We're hosts of MaximumFun.org's Ono, Ross, and Carrie.
We wanted to tell you the good news that our podcast is now weekly.
Yes, weekly. On Ono, Ross, and Carrie, we don't make extraordinary claims. We investigate them.
We go undercover with fringe religious groups, investigate paranormal claims, and participate in pseudoscientific medical treatments, and then report our findings to you.
In a time where alternative facts reign supreme, we cut through murky spin to give you the straight skinny on topics like UFOs, the anti-vaccination movement, Scientology, and even apocalyptic churches.
We're even undercover for some very exciting investigations right now.
Well, not right now, right now. That's Ono, Ross, and Carrie with new episodes every week at MaximumFun.org.
We show up so you don't have to.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Louis Vertel. With me in the studio,
Winter Mitchell,
Alonzo Duraldi,
and Karen Tongson.
I literally just want to burst out into laughter when I start thinking about this topic. This week we're talking about stuff that scared us as children and how probably random and strange and senseless it seems now. Tell me if you guys had the same experience. When thinking of stuff that scared me as a kid, I recalled stuff where it would be stuff on like VHS tapes or something where I knew I would be acquainted with it again. Like, there's some part in a movie where it's like, oh, I don't want to see that part again, you know? Mm. So it's like if I saw something one time that was scary and I would never see it again, maybe I would forget about it.
Right.
So we didn't all have VHS tapes when we were children.
Oh, tell me about the Victrolas.
Yes. The closest thing we had to movies was fire.
Shadow puppetry.
But my traumas as a child were like drummed into me again and again. One of the images I have here was from Alonzo last week, talked about Jim Henson. And on The Muppet Show, there was a very specific Muppet. I'm like scared already. Do you guys know who Marvin Suggs is?
Marvin sucks. Describe.
Well, let me tell you something. Okay, he has a very generic Frank Oz voice. It's in the Fozzie Piggy realm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's a little French.
Oh,
he is this
okay.
blue person mm-hmm. with wild black hair and some sort of, I'm going to call it a flamenco-y shirt.
Oh, yes.
And
oh.
What does this bastard do? He has an instrument called a muppaphone.
Oh, I know yeah. what we're talking about here, yes. Yeah.
He has a mallet like a xylophone. And he plays these living creatures
like
by
a marimba.
Bashing them on the head.
Yeah. That scared you?
In sequence.
Oh.
And he's like, literally in the wiki description for him, is called demented. Jim Henson gave some quote about him where he said, he's like, I just pictured him going home and having a wife who was scared of him. It's like, who put this on the air?
Yeah.
Working his shit out through the Muppets.
Christian, I have a clip of this. Do we have that set up or no? Okay. I, let's see if any of these traumas can be conveyed via audio. Here we go.
Attention! Tuning up. Ow. 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 Oh, move it, Lucy, move it. Attention!
You guys, he's bludgeoning living things.
It's like Itchy and Scratchy.
Yes.
It's like basically the Itchy and Scratchy show from The Simpsons, right?
But played as a serious drama, Karen.
Or live action, rather. Yes. Live-ish action. I was
felt
scared
like
of
that show was chaotic.
Yeah. Oh, the Muppet Show?
Yeah.
I think that's the point. I think that when
you're talking about something, and I was like, I'm sure it was there, but it was chaotic
like,
on that show.
Listening to that clip, you just remember the kind of mania
yes.
of that
yes.
was in, yes. in the Muppet Show. I was a really scared little kid. Ooh. I was so scared of the dark. I mean, largely because I grew up in an environment where there was a lot of mysticism and belief in ghosts.
Okay.
Oh.
And so, you know, I mean, it was something that my grandmother and everyone around me, all the adults when we were in Manila, would talk about all the time. So, and I even feel that I saw a ghost when I was really little. I have a memory of that. And so anything that involved or was adjacent to Catholic mysticism and like the Damien from The Omen
right.
or obviously The Exorcist, that was a super freaky deaky for me. But I think the thing that really stuck to me most or that was the most frightening, and I don't know how my parents just allowed me to watch this movie when I was like, I must have been like 6 or 7 with The Shining.
Oh, God.
And I was like, you know, because I would travel a lot with them. They were musicians. We were on the road. So like, and they used to play these in the theater movies in some of the hotels where we were staying. And The Shining was on a constant loop. And there I am living in a hotel with my parents.
Yeah.
They're out like performing and I'm left with a babysitter. And I'm like
riding
watching
a
The Shining.
Down the hall.
Exactly. Basically like that. So so that really flipped me out. And I think it is often the stuff, though, that's most closely related to aspects of real life. I was scared of I was scared of Frankenstein, too, and all vampires, Frankenstein's monster and vampires and everything. But that's the stuff that still scares me and where I, you know, now sometimes will, like, randomly turn a light on in the house while we're all asleep just because I'm like, I just hope no ghost comes and visits me right now.
I tend to think the real life stuff is scariest. I still think the scariest movie experience I've ever had was when I was 11 and saw Scream. Like, just the first scene of Drew Barrymore under the house.
Yeah.
That is unbelievably frightening.
Yes. Oh, I had to walk home through a cemetery.
I had to walk home myself. Yes, yeah.
I had to because I was 17. It was when I got to, if I wanted to go see a movie, at this point I could take myself and go there. And it was, there's a mall in San Francisco.
It's like in Colma or something?
It was in Colma. And the mall and the movie theater was, I don't believe it's there anymore, but you would walk out of it and you could walk through the cemetery to the bus stop. That was faster than waiting to go to the front where ceremony was. And I remember that I made it through the cemetery and then I got on the bus and then I got off the bus to go meet my friend afterwards and someone turned the corner from a huge hedge. I woke up that entire street. I screamed
blood
so fucking loud. But I wanted to say that inanimate objects coming to life and things just coming out of the ground, I just could not as a kid. Inanimate objects coming to life. I would have nightmares that couches would come to life. I'd be stuck in a furniture store.
Interesting.
That
oh, wow.
I would that bridges, because there are so many bridges in San Francisco, that bridges would, like, you know, become sentient and like crawl around. Like
that very reminds me of the hallucinations in Winnie the Pooh, the Heffalumps and Woozles.
Yes.
Like,
that's why I don't like the scene in The Wiz in the subway.
Those garbage cans?
Horrifying.
Oh. Guys, there's no reason that scene should be as scary as it is.
Thank you, Sidney Lumet.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, like, why does, to this day when I go to New York, to this day,
I walk away from the trash cans.
I stand at the edge of the staircase. To this day, I am almost 40 years old.
There's something about inanimate objects where it's like you can make out like a mouth. You know
what
I'm
saying?
You discover it yourself. Like, that's really creepy.
I'll tell you, going back to before, where I said about that I knew my mother knew that I was gay, she would say to my siblings, much to my chagrin, that I was sensitive.
I bet.
And I totally was. Like, I was so afraid of. Yeah, I mean, like, my brother had a Frankenstein's monster poster in his closet that freaked me out. But just, like, cruelty. Like, movies about people being, like, kidnapped or just people in awful situations. And, like, I totally self-censored as far as horror movies went. Like, I think I was probably the only person my age that didn't see Jaws in the theater.
Oh.
I finally saw it in college, you know, 10 years later. But I was a kid during the golden age of the 1970s ABC Movie of the Week.
Oh.
And that shit got dark.
Yeah, that shit got
definitely.
Dark.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Very creepy and very unsettling. And so, it was not hard to, like, freak me out. And everything did. But somebody on the Facebook page pointed out, and this was a thing that totally freaked me out as a child, because I saw this movie when it opened, the tunnel scene in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Totally.
First you got a worm crawling across a guy's face, and then a chicken is beheaded in a G-rated movie.
Well, it's fair to call that a phantasmagoria, what you see there.
To say the least.
Not a speck of light is showing, so the danger must be growing. Are the fires of hell a-glowing? Is the grisly reaper mowing? Yes! The danger must be growing, for the rowers keep on rowing, and they're certainly not showing any signs that they are slowing!
And also, obviously, Gene Wilder is, by the way, creepy anyway.
Yeah.
At his funniest, he's creepy.
Even at his funniest, he was a creepy dude.
I want to say, I think the scariest part of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, another movie I thought had scary parts growing up, is the part where he and Charlie are floating up to this, or pardon me, where Grandpa Joe
and Uncle Charlie
and Charlie are floating up to the ceiling in the
to
face
the
of the bubbles
blades.
And they are about to be diced to death, and then their remains will rain on the factory.
I honestly think that they
gosh,
did that
dismemberment
stuff.
Didn't scare me that much.
Karen's like sheets.
Dismemberment, whatever. She's no but aliens. Aliens.
Yes,
the prospect
yes.
of aliens showing up, and you know, even though I wanted to believe in benevolent visitors from outer space,
mm-hmm.
like there was nothing creepier to me than Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Just
interesting.
It's just like, that's creepy. I don't want to hear that. Don't reach out to me. I don't need that song. You know, like I would rather not know. I don't know what that says about. We need to get an analyst up in here. Really,
no, because if you
this.
Think about it, that whole era, then they were trying to make movies that were in the range of like something from another place. It was like, I used to not like the movie Brother from Another Planet. I hated that movie. Mm-hmm. I hated Starman. I hated anything where they came out of the sky and
E.T.?
Showed up. I didn't like E.T.
Mac and Me?
That's really serious?
By the way, there are like three scary parts in E.T. Right at the beginning when he comes down, just the noises E.T. makes.
Yes.
Unacceptable.
Mm. Unacceptable.
When he turns white.
Oh, God.
Someone from the Facebook page basically said E.T. forever when answering this question. Mandy Sutton was also scared of E.T., but you know.
There's the scene in the Twilight Zone movie. The Twilight Zone movie was a really scary movie. I just feel like I saw it too early. I saw it at like 4. And
I've never seen it. I know it's divided into 4 parts,
it's
right?
It's divided into 4 parts, but there's literally like 3 parts in that movie that are just beyond frightening. There's the opening scene with Dan Aykroyd and Albert Brooks where Dan Aykroyd is a werewolf. There's the scene with John Lithgow who's recreating the William Shatner one with the creepy
Terror at 40,000 feet.
Terror at 40,000 feet. Frightening. And I'm an airline brat, so I was always on a plane, and I, for the at least until I was six, I kept my window down because I didn't know what I was going to see. And then there's also the recreation of the Bill Mumy episode where he is
sending people into the cornfield.
Sending no, is that him? Is that the where he's Billy? Is it Billy?
Okay, it's good that you did that.
Yes. So about Billy and that thing that he conjures up, the Tasmanian devil. Mm. When that fucker shows up, not okay.
Well, obviously, when I think about that movie, I think about Vic Morrow being killed on the set.
Oh, yes. But, have you seen the video?
I sure have.
Oh, I love you so much.
I have you too. Don't worry.
That could not. I can't watch. That's the only time I've ever been able to watch something once.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But I always think.
Wait, there's video of the accident.
Yes. They showed it all over the news when it happened.
Oh, they did.
Yeah, the local news here in Los Angeles.
Do not want.
And by the way, I remember that. And by the way, horrifying. To be a little kid and like watch a movie, only reason my parents, besides being having grown up on Twilight Zone, but then also to be like, yeah, he's dead. And it's like, how? And then to hear it, creepy, creepy, creepy.
Do you think Max Landis and Jennifer Jason Leigh are ever at the same party? And he's like, I have to go. My dad killed her dad.
No!
I'm sure they've had a chat.
It could happen.
Yeah. Yes. No, it's a horrifying scenario. And then he went on to create or produce Clue. Anyway, John Landis.
Oh, there was a shitty 70s horror movie about snakes called
Oh, I remember that.
And I watched it on network television.
It was on
that
TV.
Freaked me out.
Yeah. You're making me think of the tarantula one. I think that's another Shatner movie.
That's them. Oh, the tarantula one is it's something else. Okay, I understand.
Yeah. There's nothing worse than Squirm.
Oh, with the worms, yes.
With the worms in Georgia electrified.
Right. Yes.
And the entire house becomes filled with them.
Yeah. But worms are annoying.
Annoying. Yeah.
But just rolling back to for a second.
Yes.
Isn't about someone turning into a snake,
yes,
too?
Eventually,
which is
yes.
even creepier. We're like, you know, this guy, is it Dirk Benedict or somebody like that?
Somebody who's like that, yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's not even that he's bitten by a snake.
Like a
but
mad
somehow,
scientist
like,
is turning him into a snake.
And he just turns into this really grotesque and pale snakey thing.
The same thing
happened to Victoria Beckham. It's very horrible.
There's a movie called The Curse 2, which is a take on that, but to a much more disgusting level. And I avoid that movie. I don't think you can show. There's got to be. I feel like there was an era where it got to be like grotesque, too real practical effects. People were like, the MPAA was like, not so much.
It's amazing that it took until, you know, the 1-2 punch of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom and Gremlins to create the PG-13 rating.
Right.
Because Poltergeist.
Oh, yeah.
Poltergeist was a PG movie.
Oh, yeah.
And that's like, that guy rips his
face
off.
That is unbelievable.
After a maggot filled steak crawls across the counter again. I'm just like literally not gonna be able to sleep tonight.
And that fucking clown.
And the clown.
Another 80s movie. Well, this one was probably also rated PG, but it was definitely not meant to be scary. Y'all remember a movie called Follow That Bird? Y'all ready?
Okay, what? I can't wait to hear this.
Follow That Bird was a Sesame Street movie.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yes.
Okay, if you don't recall the plot of this movie, guys, Big Bird is motherfucking kidnapped.
Oh, yeah.
He is basically put into, I'm sorry, a freak show.
Oh. Of course. Yes.
If, like, the Muppet movie.
It's so heartbreaking. It's like from 1982 or
85,
something.
85. Oh, 85? If the Muppet movie is, you know, the clean, exciting Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Follow That Bird is Cool World. Oh, too disturbing. It's oh, for God. Kids, except it's not.
I know, it's Sesame not. Street Presents, so it's aimed even younger than the Muppet movie is.
Right. You'll be, by the way, Sandra Bernhard, fabulous
yes,
in this movie.
Yes, she and Paul Bartel.
Yes.
Cameo love him. Diner.
You'll be thrilled to learn that I have set up a clip for this as well. This is Big Bird, painted blue by freaks, and is singing at a show, and kids in the audience are crying because Big Bird looks too sad. So anyway, here's his fucking ballad that ruined my childhood.
I'm a bluebird that's been dreaming of a rainbow I can follow to that old
this demented Jack in the Box.
So horrifying.
What could be worse than this movie?
Can I tell you something? There's, you just reminded me of something because the Muppets were so, like, you didn't know if they were real or not. I didn't know for the longest time who was in there or if they
right.
were just.
They just sit on a wall.
And by the way, they took many forms. Like, some are in the costume. Some are puppets.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But I think that one of the things that was helpful when Thriller came out was Michael releasing the making of. I think if he hadn't released the making of, I know it was released.
John Landis again.
John Landis again. But I know it was released because people thought he was a devil worshiper. Mm-hmm. And then he also did it because of the Jehovah's Witness.
The occult.
The occult. Yeah.
Because of my personal beliefs. Exactly. I wish to stress.
Yes. So I think if he hadn't released that making of, I wouldn't have been able to continue to connect with him as a pop music icon, because that was a really tough thing to swallow. You love this person so much and now they're in your nightmares in a really grotesque and uncomfortable way. The scene from I couldn't deal with the scene from the end of the Skid Row dance break all the way up to the house and into the and going to grab the girlfriend.
I think the final turnaround with the eyes is scary.
It's frightening. Yeah. That entire sequence was so frightening to watch that they needed a making of to show kids, like, it's not real.
Right. And Ola Ray is glamorous.
Her Jerry curl is popping.
Well, I'll tell you, Lewis, you had VHS cassettes growing up, and I had reruns. And certain reruns from Screen Gems ended with a logo that always gave me the creeps, and I was very relieved to discover as an adult that it wasn't just me. There is, in fact, an entire documentary called The S from Hell, made by the guy who would go on to make Room 237, the movie about The Shining, about how fucking creepy this logo is.
Oh my God.
Because it's like the two halves of an S that are snaking out from the top and the bottom to like strangle this round thing, and this creepy 8-note synthesizer tone. It is the stuff of nightmares.
That is shocking.
Yeah. Right?
You know what it makes me think of, though? And this is a sort of, bringing it back into a kind of synthesis with our discussion of Big Bird, is the creepiness of puppets in general, and particularly ventriloquist dummies. This is, my wife wrote a dissertation on ventriloquism and ventriloquists. Oh. So I had to, through that process, watch like every creepy film about ventriloquist dummies with her.
The magic
up to,
ad.
Yes, absolutely. Is
that scarred
the
my
ad itself, yes. I was just about to say.
Sorry.
I think we were about the same, similar age.
Yeah.
And so, I saw that trailer. I was little. I just remember it. And it's just the close-up of Corky. Is Corky the name of the puppet?
Yeah.
Or the magician. I can't even remember. Anyway, of Fats. Fats is the name
Fats,
of the puppet.
That's right.
And Corky is Anthony Hopkins. Anyway, Fats, that creepy wooden face and little jaw, like unhinging. I mean, that.
Did
like,
you watch Howdy Doody growing up, though?
I did not watch Howdy Doody.
We're not
growing
that
up.
Old.
Okay, because I was going to say that my parents don't seem to have the same response to like dolls and
or,
dummies,
like Charlie McCarthy or this sorts of thing. But I think it was really magic that became that like turning point of like turning that.
I mean, there had been, what's that 50s horror anthology, Dead of Night?
Oh, yes.
Had a, you know, there were a few creepy devil dolls, but magic, I think, totally ruined ventriloquism.
Wait, I have one. Did anybody else ever get afraid of like after 9:55 when the news would bust in like burr, 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 like that? Did that ever, or breaking news? Nobody else got afraid?
I found the news in general scary.
I know, no, I mean, of course, but there, like, you ever, like, when you're like, they don't really do this anymore unless something like crazy major happens because of the dawning of cable news. But like, if you're watching something and all of a sudden they're like breaking news, and it was, and I'm getting chills right now. But they did it when I was 5 when the Night Stalker showed up in San Francisco, and I will never that was the first time I felt palpable, like fear could walk through my front door at any time.
Oh yeah, well I have a similar story, which was when I was 10, 11. That's when a little icon named Andrew Cunanan emerged. What a doll. Okay. Well, he killed Gianni Versace, and then he was gone. Then there were rumors he had flown on a plane to, you guessed it, the Midwest. I was staying with my very glamorous Aunt Sandy, who has never stopped smoking Winston's. We were at her like perfectly serene lake house where there's no sounds, and I'm with my cousin Tiffany, same age as me, and we of course are hearing noises. It's probably like a boat coming up against the dock or whatever. Oh no. We armed ourselves for Andrew Cunanan coming in and killing us with gayness. I literally was clutching.
Did you have a plan if he showed up?
Well, the plan was I found the only blunt instrument in sight. Thanks, Marvin Suggs. It was the game of Jenga. I was stalking doorways with Jenga waiting for Andrew. Anyway.
Oh, we just had the Mansons when I was a kid. You know?
Oh, yeah. Helter Skelter, yes. When I first encountered... that I think it was like a documentary about it.
There was the TV movie with Steve Railsback.
Oh, yeah, that really flipped me out.
Which I think I also self-censored because I was like, no, thank you. You got to tell your wife this. As an adult, I did at my old film festival in Dallas, we showed a documentary about ventriloquism called Belly Talkers. Uh-huh. And the woman who directed it is herself a ventriloquist.
Oh, yeah.
And she brought the figure up with her to the Q&A, and the figure asked me a question, and it's the one time ever that I have vapor locked during a Q&A. Like, I stared down Dennis Hopper, but that fucking ventriloquist doll, I had nothing.
It just, like, turns its head slowly and locks eyes with
yes,
you.
I couldn't, could not cope.
Oh, my God.
You know, sound-wise, what's just as freaky as the breaking news, any Amber Alert that you get on your phone nowadays?
Oh, totally scary. Yes.
I just, like, jump out of my skin whenever that comes
out. I had to turn them off because the first one gave me a heart attack.
Yes.
I guess I just don't know how.
No.
No, me neither. But also, just when you see them, like, light up an entire room, too, it's like a virus has gotten everybody.
But also, like, I hope we don't offend anybody about
it's a horrifying real-life thing.
But it's like, I can't deal with somebody with as manic anxiety like I do. That is just too far.
The 1994 tournament on Jeopardy was interrupted by the OJ verdict.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Anyway, it stuck with me.
But who remembers?
Yes.
I think weather now they'll do it for. Like, if you're watching Wendy Williams and there's a flash flood warning.
Sure.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about then.
Yeah.
Too much.
Oh, yeah, the emergency broadcasting system, always terrifying.
This station is conducting a test of the emergency broadcasting system. This is only a test.
Here's a question I have. So is Stranger Danger-y, like, here's what to do if you get thrown in a trunk training given to any of you guys, too?
Yes, I had Stranger Danger, and I utilized it.
We had Don't Talk to Strangers, not so much the trunk.
Yeah. Okay, no, but we had actually a Street Smart. So if somebody came to you and said, hey, your mom told me to pick you up, I have to be like, what name did she give you? And then if the name didn't correspond to the name that I knew, then I would be like, Stranger Danger, Street Smart. And I did that like ridiculous
all the time.
Unnecessary amount. My mom caught me once in the midst of it. She was like, what are you doing?
Well, my parents were block parents, which meant that you could run to our house for safety.
Oh.
But the sign, the block parent sign itself was incredibly creepy because it just said block parent and it was just a giant orange hand.
Yes.
That does not feel safe.
The neighborhood watch guy.
Yeah.
Do you remember the neighborhood watch guy?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
and
yeah,
he'd just be like creeping in and I'd be like, well, if I see that guy.
Wait, is that the one where he has sort of a Dick Tracy
like a fedora? Yeah, fedora. Like a popped collar.
Fabulous man lurking.
Yes. Possibly McGruff the crime dog.
I would be so horrified by those signs.
Dave and I just watched The Legend of Hell House on Netflix, which is this great 1973 horror movie with, like, Roddy McDowall, and it's directed by the guy who would go on to do the Witch Mountain movies and Watcher in the Woods for Disney. And it made me realize that so much of the horror that I saw as a child was those, like, those Hammer films and those 70s movies where everybody just looked uncomfortable all the time.
Yes.
Like, everybody's wearing turtlenecks under tweeds. And
sweating.
Yeah, and the women have, like, the blue eyeshadow and the hair is pulled way back. And it could have been a romantic comedy, but just everybody looked so uncomfortable. It gave me this sense of unease all the time. And it all came back watching that movie. It was just the way that people dressed then. It was it put me off.
Has anybody belonged in a turtleneck more than Roddy McDowell?
That's true. Yeah, no, to the manor born, for sure.
You say his name, and that's automatically where he's at.
Can I tell a really creepy, scary story involving the movie Halloween?
Of course.
By all means.
Peach Eyes Souls, come back to us.
Well, when Sarah and I were first together, we stayed in for Halloween and watched Halloween. And this was at my old apartment in Silver Lake, kind of Spanish style with big open windows and like really kind of thin blinds. We went to bed and she starts poking at me and saying, "Babe, babe." And I just opened my eyes. I have sleep apnea, so I wear one of those masks sometimes. Yeah. I ripped it off and I just see this figure backlit in the window staring into our bedroom. And it looks like that woman with long hair in The Ring. And I just scream out loud, and we're both screaming like crazy, and the figure doesn't move. And I'm like, "What are you? Who are you?" And we're flipping out. None of our neighbors come to check on us. And we run to the front, and we have a beveled little, like, come and knock on your door window in our door. And then the face appears in that window as well. And I'm like, what are you doing? Who are you? And he's like, "I come here all the time. You know, I'm just visiting. Let me in." And I'm like, I still think it's a supernatural being. I call the police. And then, of course, the police insist I specify what race. And I can't tell. And I'm not about to go look.
Every race. No race. Yes.
I was just like, the funniest part of it is I said, "I don't know. I think he might be white or light-skinned Latino." And then this is what he says. "I'm white." Anyway. So this guy was apparently like wandered off from Sunset Boulevard, like, you know, took too many Jello shots of some like MDMA Jello shots, got really crazy, passed out in my backyard, and the police called him away.
Oh my God.
Anyway, imagine watching Halloween and having that happen to you on the same night. It was fucked up.
The only way "I'm white" should be pronounced.
I accidentally terrified Dave White one night because not long after we saw The Blair Witch Project, which if you'll recall has that creepy end of the guy standing against the wall. So Dave always goes to bed hours early before me because he never got school teacher hours out of his head. So he's asleep. I walk into our bedroom where there's a closet in the corner with a door, and I'm trying to find the doorknob in the dark so that I can like hang up my robe before I go to sleep. And he wakes up. He like just turns his head and just sees me standing in the corner, stiff facing the wall, and just goes, "Ah!"
Oh my God. I'm so glad none of this shit ever happened to me.
Oh, my God.
That's fucking frightening.
That was exhausting to hear.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. You're listening to Pop Rocket. By the way, I was also afraid of the mountain climber from The Price is Right. Not as scary as those things. We'll be right back after this.
Hi there, I'm comedian and movie buff Ricky Carmona, and I'm excited to tell you about a new show I'm doing called Who Shot Ya? Join me, LA Weekly film critic April Wolf.
I'm gonna call Star Wars when it comes out the Clint Howard Project.
Film reviews editor for The Wrap, Alonzo Duralde.
Everything Charlize Theron knows about killing somebody with a high-heeled shoe she learned from single white female, trust me.
And our dope-ass friends each week.
I think we need to end this pernicious belief in our society that there is anything remotely fuckable about rich dudes who are emotionally unavailable.
So if you're tired of whack opinions and you're looking for a smart, funny film discussion show, check out Who Shot Ya, Son? That's what we do. And you can find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Louis Fertel. With me in the studio,
Winter Mitchell,
Alonzo Duralde,
and Karen Tongson.
Do you know what we do every week on Pop Rocket? We do it every week. We ask our panel, what's your current jam, in fact? And this week, we're going to start with Karen Tongson.
So my favorite bar, my Cheers bar, where everybody knows my name and plies me with free salty snacks, is closing. It's been open for over 77 years, and the person who's owned it has owned it for almost 30 years, and it's called the Smog Cutter.
And oh, on Virgil.
Yes, on Virgil. It's a karaoke bar, and it's run by Mama
it's
Nita.
Closing?
It's closing. The last call is Sunday, the 29th.
The salty snacks were just to make you buy more drinks.
Well, they actually keep they even give me curry and feed me whatever. They're my bar family, and so in as a tribute to the Smog Cutter, my song this week is one for my baby and one more for the road, the Etta James version.
And oh, and I could tell you, and I could tell you a lot, but you've got to be true to your code, and oh, and make it one for my baby, and one more for the road.
I know the go-to version is Sinatra's because it's really quiet and melancholic. I mean, it's not the first version. Fred Astaire sang it first. It's from a Harold Arlen musical from 1943. And I mean, the Sinatra version was even in Blade Runner recently.
Right. Yes.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Well, yeah, like one of the holograms, right? But I like Etta James's version because it's such a sad sentiment, but has a kind of jaunty feel to it.
Like a resilience kind
of. And, you know, that's the sort of the sense that if you have one more for the road, you're not just going to crash and die.
Right.
There's a very funny version of it on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, where she sings it to Lou.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Hold on. Is this also what Bette Midler sang on the final Carson?
It is what Bette Midler sang for Johnny Carson. Anyway, I like this version a lot because it has a sense of futurity and continuance and joy to it. And that's what I hope for my Smog Cutter people.
Holler. Yes. It's a great bar. I love Smog Cutter. Let's go to Alonzo Duralde.
So Dave White and I have been, you know, we do a TV podcast and we watch stuff that maybe we wouldn't normally just so we can talk about it. But one of the shows that Dave was very excited about was the return of TRL. Because back in the day, that was how he knew what the kids were listening to. And, you know, because that show was all about the countdown and what's hot and what's out and all that stuff. And this new version, I don't know what the fuck it is. Because there's no countdown. There's barely any music. It's mostly like those cute boys who are popular on Instagram because they take their shirts off and pull faces.
And like, imagine watching a TV for those people.
Exactly. Yeah, they're forced to talk, and it's never a good idea. But the episode that I watched of them, they actually did play a video. And I was kind of astonished because the song was cute, and the video, which was not only directed by the singer, is like unabashedly lesbionic from start to finish. It is all about the cute female singer trying to get the other cute girl to like pay attention to her and kiss her maybe. And it's just adorable. And when I went to the YouTube page to find the song, like all of her songs are like, hey, girl, hit me up and girl meets girl. And, ooh, you know, lady, lady, lady. So anyway, I'm
that's what it says outside my house.
There you go. Right under the window where the guy's looking.
Exactly.
So yeah, I may be late to the picnic on this one, but Hayley Kiyoko and the song is Feelings.
Hell yes.
Yeah.
There is no more honest lesbianic lyric than I over-communicate, which is the first line that we listen to here.
Well, she's got it down at a young age.
Yeah. And also, the fact that her name rhymes with Hayley Kiyoko,
yes, she's not
shocking.
Hayley Kiyoko, it's Hayley
shocking.
Kiyoko. I made that mistake too.
Yes, but it's that's an awesome song. I'm excited that you gave it to me, and it's so new. I get to know it. Winter.
This song is dedicated to Janet Jackson and all of us fans of Janet Jackson. I can say the first time I was horrified for someone else was watching her titty flop out during the Super Bowl and being like, did anybody else see that? Oh, no, the entire world just saw that.
Sadly, that was in a post-TiVo world.
Exactly.
Ba-doop, 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 ba-doop.
As we all know, Justin Timberlake is doing, I don't understand this decision. He doesn't have an album. He hasn't even committed himself to music since Trolls.
Trolls 2, baby.
Troll 2, baby. So I'm conflicted because as a musician, as an artist, I like Justin Timberlake. I actually love all of his albums. But as a person...
Should I leave? Okay, go ahead.
But as a person, he's problematic as fuck. He will quick to throw a bitch under the bus. Real thirsty for an Oscar. Didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that sometimes he's detached from, like, what he represents and, like, who he is, because I know he's talented. But I really have a problem with the fact that he's doing the Super Bowl, and I feel like there is 100% zero chance of him getting up onto that stage without bringing her. There's just no way.
It feels like she has to come.
Yeah.
He owes her.
He owes her. Yes. If he doesn't do it, I don't want to see you.
Dead to me.
You're dead to me.
By the way, a lot of his sound, particularly in his solo albums, he would have to thank Janet for that, too.
There's a video today that somebody posted on Oh No They Didn't of him, I think, during a Cribs, going around his bedroom showing the Janet Jackson, his childhood bedroom, showing the Janet Jackson posters.
Oh, yeah.
And saying that she's the reason why he wanted to become a singer and a dancer. During his Mickey Mouse Club days. Mm-hmm. So it was something like that. So I chose You. This song is rumored to be about Michael, but it's from Velvet Rope, which is to me one of the most definitive albums of her discography. Directly directed towards Timberlake. You better do the right thing, brother.
That album also has the great Go Deep. I love that song.
Oh, that's a party jam.
Yes.
That's all quadrat.
Yeah, I think my favorite album of hers is Janet, but Velvet Rope's probably number two.
Velvet Rope is strong.
Got Till It's Gone. Come on.
Yeah.
I'm of the Control Rhythm Nation school, but it's all good.
Oh, yeah. I also love the song Control. Love the song Control. I am going to disappoint myself here by picking a song that is not from 1982 to 1984, which is where, you know, I try to live.
In your sweet spot.
Yes. It is new, shockingly. Well, newish. It has 30 million views on YouTube, but that is because of Europe, which is another continent. This woman now has come here. I heard this song. It's called No Roots by this woman, Alice Merton. I heard it on alternative radio, which means nothing now. It's just
alternative to what?
Yeah, like 21 Pilots,
right?
All day long, 24 hours a day.
In the 90s, alternative meant like you owned a guitar, but you weren't happy about it. Now it's just like fun noises by people we don't really know yet, I guess. But anyway, this song is called No Roots, and I think it's a jam. Different land, but I've got memories and trouble. Chorus is a banger as well, but please, I this song better happen. Also, I usually don't love vocalists in the world of like a Regina Spektor or kind of the affecty,
accented.
Yes, yeah. That now Sia has super capitalized, but she might be my favorite of that bunch. So.
I'm getting a little. Who's the Suddenly I See?
Oh, KT Tunstall.
Yes. Yes,
a little bit.
My favorite thing about American Idol is the amount of people we made sing songs like those.
Yes.
Like, how many people had to sing Put Your Records On by Corinne Bailey Ray to be on TV?
What was the other KT Tunstall song they would always do in American Idol? The Something and the Something Tree?
Black Horse and the Cherry Tree.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes.
Catherine McPhee, thanks you.
Yes. Feel bad for Put Your Records On. Man, they really tried to make that a thing.
I know. And also, I mean, she did have that Like a Star song. I mean, and then her like husband died or something.
No.
Anyway.
Oh, well, then there you go.
We could talk about that another time. You've been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Louis Fertel, with Winter Mitchell, Alonzo Duralde, and Karen Tongson. Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Azumiso. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Thanks to Evenus Regalis and MegXYZ for the 5-star reviews on iTunes. If you haven't already, please review us. I was on another podcast recently, and someone said I had an awful personality. Moving on. It wasn't this podcast.
The podcaster or the reviewer?
No. You know what? I'll look into it. MegXYZ says, this show definitely hits all four quadrants if you want to mention that.
Thank you, girl.
How about that? Get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Pop Rocket, or join our Facebook group and join the discussion. We're a product of MaximumFun.org, and our producer is Christian Bones Duenas.
I bet.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.